The following is a synopsis of the Sichas of Shabbos, Parshas Bahalaischa, Yutes Sivan, Hei Tinase, corresponding to the year 1991. The Gemara tells us that the Parsha, Vayihi Ben Sei Ha'arein, section within this week's Parsha, Bahalaischa, which talks about how the Ark would journey. So the Gemara says this parsha is considered to be a separate book of the Torah. And from this we see, as we can understand from the way the Gemara describes this, that in addition to the way we normally divide the Torah into five books, but because Vayihi ben Sei Ha'arein, those few verses represent a separate book, so now we also have a division of the Torah into seven books. Because the book of Bamidbar itself is divided into three books. Everything from the beginning of the book until the Parsha of Vayihi ben Sei, the Parsha of Vayihi ben Sei itself, and from there to the end of the book. So there are questions that arise based on this premise. Number one, how is it possible that based on this division, the sixth book, which is the one that follows Vayihi ben Sei, begins with a negative experience? Totally negative. Vayihi ha'am kimesenanim. The people were complaining. They were rebelling. And all other books begin with something positive. Breishis, Shmos, Vayihi ben Sei. But here, the opening is negative. Even the word Vayihi, and it came to pass, we know that whenever the Torah uses that word, it's a symbol, an expression of sadness. And the word ha'am, it says Vayihi ha'am, and the nation, whenever the word ha'am is used, as opposed to B'nai Yisrael, it represents the lowest class of the people, the Rishayim, the wicked. And Mesayinim itself, the complaining, the murmuring, is of course a totally negative thing. So how could it be that a book will begin with such a negative beginning? That's the first question. The second question is, what is the significance of dividing the Torah into seven books, beyond the division, the classical division, into five? And number three, since Bahalaischa is the parsha which divides the book of Bamidbar into three parts, then there must be a connection between this division of the Torah into seven and the parsha of Bahalaischa in particular. The simple connection is, Bahalaischa is about the menorah, and the menorah had seven branches to it, corresponding to the seven books of the Torah. But we still have to understand what is the thematic, what is the conceptual basis for this connection. So the Rebbe explains by way of an introduction. It's well known that everything in the Torah, it must be a lesson for a Jew, teaching him how to better serve Hashem. Torah itself comes from the word hirah, lesson, instruction, guidance. How much more so when the Torah is talking about the Mishkan, the sanctuary, which is a very general institution and structure that relates to the specific service of every Jew, that he should become a dwelling place for God. Because when the Torah talks about the Mishkan, it says, make for me a sanctuary and I will dwell within them, within each and every Jew. Every Jew has to create a Mishkan. So when you're talking about the Mishkan, and especially when you're talking about the menorah, the lighting of the menorah, we're talking about a very, very general aspect of the Mishkan. So what does this teach us? Rashi explains that since Rashi is written for every Jew, for all levels, even for the five-year-olds who are just starting to learn the simple meaning of the text, so that whatever Rashi says is a general lesson for everyone. So what does Rashi say on the words Bahalaischa Haneiros, when you kindle the lights of the menorah? So Rashi explains what is the meaning of the word Bahalaischa, which literally means when you bring it up, that you have to light the flames so that the flames go up, that they go up on their own accord. You don't have to continually keep them burning. They can rise on their own accord, which teaches us a lesson about how a Jew has to serve God. A Jew has to kindle, ignite his neshama. His soul is called a ner, a light, candle. Ner Hashem nishmas Adam. The soul of a man is God's light. And you have to kindle it and ignite it with the flame and the light of Torah. Torah is also called Torah Or. And when this light is kindled, it illuminates the whole world. And it brings this about this connection of the whole world with holiness, which is the whole objective of creation, to make this world into a dwelling place for God. And here there's a special lesson that the flame has to go up on its own. This teaches us how we're supposed to light our souls. The flame refers to the general idea that a Jew is not here to create the candle. He has to kindle it. The candle's already there, and it's ready to be lit. All we have to do now is to make sure that the flame goes up. The neshama is there. Torah mitzvahs are in existence. And through them, we can light the neshama. That's the first thing. The second thing is ayla. It has to go up. It teaches you the manner in which we serve. In general, there's a difference between something that is standing and something that is moving, that is mobile. A Jew can serve God in a way that he's standing in one place. There's no constant movement and improvement from day to day. But in holiness, we have a rule, Milan B'Kaidish. We have to always go up in matters of holiness. There has to be a continuous increase in such a way that a Jew is never standing in one place. He's always in a state of movement in a spiritual sense. Moreover, not just movement, but aliyah. There's two types of movement. It could be horizontal, it could be vertical, going up. Here we have a chiddush, a novelty in the manner in which we are mobile. One could go lengthwise, breadthwise, same level. It's the same level, the same category of service. But he can go wider with more branches. Aliyah implies a different kind of going up, going from one level to a much higher level. It's not that you're doing the same thing, just in more breadth and encompassing more aspects, but you're in a completely different level, in a totally different plane. And the third thing is meileha. It happens by itself. This teaches us something very essential in the way we light the neshama. The lighting, the igniting of our soul has to be to such an extent that what we have ignited could shine and illuminate of its own accord. It doesn't need you keep on igniting it. What does this mean in terms of our service to Hashem? In spite of the fact that our service is influenced by other considerations, by other causes. Of course, God is the first. He's the one who gives us the strength. Torah mitzvahs is the method through which we ignite our soul. Likewise, our environment, our parents, our teachers, and so on and so forth. They are the ones who lead us to serving God. So these are all elements that are involved in getting us to serve Hashem. But in the end, the flame has to go up on its own. We cannot rely and get support from others, from external influences. We have to reach a level where we could shine on our own. And there's a analogy for this, analogy of a teacher and a student. Even though the teacher is the one who gives the student all the instruments that he needs, all the skills that he needs, and teaches him in the most perfect manner, but what is the goal of the teacher? And in the end, the student could delve into the subject on his own to understand it with his own faculties, with his own intellect. In a general sense, what this is all about is Matan Torah. God is like the teacher, gave the Torah to the Jewish people. We, the students who have received the Torah, we have to toil with our own efforts to find new dimensions and new meanings in Torah. On the contrary, after the Torah was given to us, we are the only ones that can establish what is the halacha. We know that Talmud says the Torah is not in heaven, that it was given to humans based on the principles of Torah, that they should rule as to what Torah has to say about any given situation. And this can be manifest. This is expressed specifically when in the learning of Torah of every individual and also in his performance of the mitzvahs. How do we see this manifest itself? In learning Torah, it has to be so etched into every individual by repeated review of the teachings of the Torah that it's rested in your mind in an absolute way. You don't have to learn it anymore. The flame has risen on its own. And in terms of doing mitzvahs, a person has to be so conditioned to do mitzvahs that it happens by himself, that the foot naturally is inclined to go in the way to do a mitzvah, that your custom becomes your nature. As the Gemara says, when you come to Modim, when you bow down by yourself. You don't have to get your body to bow. You not normally and naturally are inclined to bow down. That means that things become so ingrained in you that things can happen by itself. Of course, at the same time, we also have to make sure that you don't get into the habit of doing things without even thinking what you're doing. But after you're already completely, totally involved in what you're doing, that it happens on its own, then you reach the next level, you go to the next higher level. Self-understood that the same thing is true with the way you influence other Jews. And it's also be measured by this approach. What is the goal that when you're influencing another person, he should become a source of light on his own? That he doesn't need you to keep on igniting his spark and keep on bringing light to him. He can do it on his own. Now, in this approach, where the flame goes up on its own, there are two stages, two different levels. First of all, first level is that even when the body on its own becomes illuminated with the light of Torah, but it's something superimposed on your nature. And the proof of that is that you have to keep on conditioning yourself to do this. In other words, even after you have conditioned yourself, it goes by itself. It becomes your second nature. But the fact that you have to condition yourself means that it's not you. Then you get to the second level after the first level has been achieved. And that's to reveal how the body itself, on its own, without the conditioning, is illuminating with the light of holiness. How do you do that? By revealing how the body itself is not only that it's not a concealment of godliness, but the body itself is connected to God's very essence. The body itself is godliness. Now, this is true also with regard to the way a Jew affects the rest of the world. By doing mitzvahs with physical objects, the physical object itself becomes an instrument of holiness. But here also, we see the idea of the flame going up on itself. Because on one hand, when the Jew does a mitzvah with a certain object, he's instilling the holiness into the object. But on the other hand, after the Jew finishes doing his part, he ignites the object, he brings light to it. Now the holiness has to go up on its own. The object becomes an independently holy object. It doesn't depend on you for it to be holy. Moreover, there's also a reciprocal effect between the object of the mitzvah and the person himself. That object, the entire holiness of that object, came from the person, could then reciprocate and reverse the process and affect the person. We find this with regard to a shvua, to an oath. You have to hold an object of a mitzvah, and that's what makes the oath have its full force. The object itself, because it is an object of holiness, which was made by the person, is what makes the person's oath have the strength that it needs. And this is also expressed with regard to sacrifices. A Jew has to be the one who sanctifies and offers the sacrifice. So it starts off with the person. But after the person makes the animal holy and the sacrifice holy, it no longer depends on the person. It has an independent holiness that cannot be removed by anyone. And the same thing is true in matters of day-to-day life, the optional matters of life that are not directly mitzvahs. The flame has to go up on its own in terms of fulfilling what it says, b'chol derechecha te'ehu. You have to know God in all your ways. The ways that, of your life, the neutral things that you do, become transformed into an inseparable part of your serving of God. And this is expressed very simply with regard to a child, that you make sure that a child's room has a pushka, a charity box, holy books, in a way that it's very obvious that it's there. So as soon as you enter into the room, that awakens you and alerts you to the fact that there is a mitzvah of giving tzedakah and there's a mitzvah of learning Torah. Based on the above, we'll be able to answer the three questions that were asked in the beginning of this talk about why the Torah was divided into seven. How is it possible, the first question was, that the sixth book would begin with such negative things about the nation murmuring and complaining? And also, what's the significance of the division of the Torah into seven books, and how is it connected to Parshas Bahalozcha? Where do we find, the Rebbe says, the idea that the flame goes up on itself, on its own? That's when you can see how the holiness reaches, extends, and permeates the lowest of levels. Levels that on their own are not related to anything holy. And when you can bring light, that the flame touches them, that they become torches, they become flames themselves, that's the test that shows that your service is solid because it has reached the lowest of levels. And there's a famous analogy to that is from the building of a structure, that when you uplift, when you raise up the bottom part of the structure, you could raise the whole structure. But if you start with the top, you can't get any other part of it. That's why the menorah had to be kindled by Aaron HaKohen. He is the one who has the power to illuminate all the seven lights, because that's what Aaron is all about, elevating the lowest of levels. And this was manifested in his behavior, as it says in Pirkei Avos, he loved all creatures, all people, and he brought them close to the Torah. Why does it use the term Briyos? The Alter Rebbe says, which means creatures, instead of just saying he loved all people, because even people that have no overt, obvious quality, other than the fact that they were created by God, those are the people, even they, he was able to ignite and illuminate. And that's the test, that the flame has gone up on its own, when even the lowest levels are being able to be elevated. And this is expressed by dividing the Torah into seven parts. In general, the difference between dividing the Torah into five and dividing it to seven is based on the spheros, the divine attributes. The first divine attributes, the first five of the seven, are the essential emotional traits, where they stand by themselves. The last two, Yesod and Malchus, relate to the way the emotions, the emotional attributes, are ready to have influence on the outside, on the lower levels. And the same thing is true with regard to the Jewish people and Torah. In the Jewish people, there is a division into five. That's the division in all matters of holiness, corresponding to the five books of the Torah. As commentaries explain on the Mishnah that says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the great leader, had five students, even though he had much more than five, but they were divided into five categories. That's the division of Jews that correspond to the division of Torah, a holy division. However, when you talk about the division of the Torah into seven, or the Jewish people into seven, that encompasses the entire Jewish people, including those who are not openly and overtly involved with matters of holiness. And the same thing is true with the Torah. The five books of the Torah talks about Torah as it is by itself. It's all holy, completely holy. But since the objective of Torah is to have an effect on the world, so it also has to have an aspect, an element of the sixth and seventh level, the ones that are connected to the world. Obviously, with the way they are contained within the Torah, they're also holy, but when they come into the world, they can express and they can highlight things that are undesirable, that are in this world, that Torah is there to change and correct. Now, based on what we said before, which of the two approaches is a higher level? The truth is that the higher level is the latter. Because when do we know that the flame is able to go up on its own and it's the most complete manner? It's when you can elevate the lowest of levels. Therefore, we understand why the sixth book begins with negative beginnings. Vayehi, expression of sorrow, of pain, ha'am, the nation, referring to the wicked, misenin, the murmuring, and a very negative and undesirable state of affairs. Because when that is affected, then it shows that the flame is going up by itself in the most complete and perfect manner through the performance of tshuva. The ultimate tshuva is where you do it out of love. And when you do that out of love, the Talmud says your sins, intentional sins, become merits. And then you reach a much higher level, as it says, the place where the Bali tshuva, where the people who return to Judaism stand, even the most perfect tzaddikim cannot stand there. That's the difference between the five and the seven. The five represents the tzaddikim, and the seven represents the Bali tshuva. And we could explain that when it says, Vayihi ha'am, the nation, it came to pass, the nation was kim misayinim, like they were murmuring. What does it mean, like? The truth is that the whole purpose of this experience was in order for the ultimate elevation that would come later through tshuva. So it wasn't really misayinim, murmuring. It was like murmuring, because it really ended up reaching a much higher level. Now, the power to elevate the lowest of levels comes from the book that preceded it, Vayihi b'nesei ha'arein. Also, the next parsha, Parsha Shlach, we also can see this theme of the flame going up on its own. Since Torah talks about the meraglim, the spies, even though the Torah doesn't want to talk about, it's not its custom to talk about derogatory things of people, and the fact that the Haftorah expresses the content of the parsha, and the Haftarah talks about the spies that Yeshua sent, and they were successful, and that helped in the conquest of the land, in contrast to the spies that Moshe sent. So we understand from this that it's the power of the Meraglim that Moshe sent, which included Yeshua, that empowered the sending of spies later by Yeshua, that it should succeed. That's also Shalheves Eilam Eileha. His influence, Moshe's influence, Torah wouldn't just talk about what he did in a negative way for the negative part, is to tell us that his influence helped Yeshua's sending of the spies. That, in a way, it's like the flame was going up on itself. So it's the sending of the spies by Moshe that led later on to Yeshua's successful sending of spies that led to the conquest of the land. Now, the whole idea of tshuva, which is highlighted over here, is connected to the date of the 20th of Sivan. The Magen Avraham cites the fact that there was a custom in Poland to fast on that day because of terrible tragedies that occurred on this day historically. And nevertheless, our Rebbes did not have this custom of fasting. Even when the previous Rebbe lived in Poland, and that was a Polish custom, he did not fast then. So the Rebbe says it doesn't mean he was lacking the advantage of fasting, but he was able to accomplish whatever had to be accomplished without fasting. And here we see the maila, the advantage of the tshuva of tzaddikim, that they're not even lacking the value of tshuva. They can have that as well. And with regard to Poland, the Rebbe said, there's a hint in the word Poland. Poland is a composite of two Hebrew words, po, lint. Here, they will stay overnight. This is where the Jewish people will stay in the time of Golos, in time of exile. So on one hand, you have to know it's Lila, Lina, you're staying overnight, it's dark, because it's exile, but you're only here overnight, only temporarily until the Geula. But on the other hand, you have to know that even in the time of exile, this is a time of rest. There will be relative peace and rest. As the Rama says, one of his responsa, that in that country, in Poland, in his time, the Jewish people lived in relative peace. Now, in spite of the fact that this is the generation that precedes the redemption, on one hand, it's the lowest generation, a very low in a spiritual sense, but simultaneously, it's the heel of the foot that lifts up the whole body, including all the generations that preceded us, in a way that it's the flame that goes up on its own and will bring the true and complete redemption. A summary of the synopsis. The lesson from this parsha of Bahaloscha, of lighting the menorah, is that the flame should go up on its own. And this has to be a lesson that is clear to every Jew, men, women, and children. As Rashi says, I'm writing this even for those who are just beginning to study Torah, five-year-old. Rashi says, I'm coming here to give the simple meaning of the text, which is the level of the five-year-old. So it has to be a lesson for everyone, including the five-year-old. The lesson of the flame going up on itself is that every Jew gets support from God and from Aaron HaKohen. But he shouldn't be content with that support. He has to be able to arouse and stimulate his own faculties and to see to it that he should serve God with his own efforts to such an extent that he doesn't need anything on the outside to awaken him. He doesn't need his parents' influence. He doesn't need his teachers. He doesn't need any external support to help him. And this is hinted in the word Shalheves, the flame. Flame means that everything is already there. You have the wick, you have the oil. All you have to do is contribute the flame. Oled goes up. That means it's a constant elevation. You're going to a much higher level, and it's me'eleha, it's of its own accord. You don't need outside support. Now, this has to be, in terms of your own service, how you serve God on your own with learning. You shouldn't be content with what you've been taught by your teacher or what you've learned the other day. You have to continually learn more and more until the learning is etched in your memory, and you no longer need the help of a teacher or the help of a book. And it applies also to the observance of mitzvahs, to condition your body to do mitzvahs on their own accord, and to keep on adding to that, of course, by doing mitzvahs with more excellence, more beauty. And it also applies to the way you will influence other people, that they should be able to stand on their own two feet, and they shouldn't need someone else to help them all the time. And the way you affect the world also has to be in such a way that the physical objects with which you did the mitzvah should be so refined and they become an object of holiness that they could in turn return the influence and affect the person himself, as the example the Rebbe gave of an oath that you make with an object of a mitzvah, which enhances the status of the oath that the person is making. And likewise, in matters of mundane matters, that you should make sure that the objects that you affect should stimulate and arouse you in your service to God. Now, since the objective of this service is the person on his own should serve God with his own efforts, so it also has to affect every aspect of the world, even the lowest of levels. And that's the proof that you've succeeded, when you're able to reach the lowest of levels. So it follows, therefore, that our parsha is divided into three. The parsha before Vayhi ben Soa, the parsha of Vayhi ben Soa, and the parsha that begins with the apparently negative beginning, and it came to pass that the nation was like murmuring. Since this last parsha, the sixth of the seven books of the Torah, according to this division, relates to the way we work on the rest of the world, because the five represent the five faculties that are within the person himself, and the last two attributes, which correspond to the last two, the additional two books of the Torah, relate to the way we relate to the outside world, to the very lowest of the outside world. Vayihi ha'am kimisaininim. And that what gives you the power to be able to reach that low level and to refine it, it's the parsha of Vayihi ben Soa, which talks about how through the ark, yafutz aivecha, that your enemies will scatter and your enemies will flee. That means you will be able to affect even the negative. And what are the practical lessons from this? The Rebbe lists four things that we should examine: the message that was given in the beginning of the talk about how it should be a shalheves eilem eileha. You have to make sure that everything you do goes up on its own accord. You don't need the support from the outside anymore. Learning Torah, even though in temporarily in Golos, we have to fill up the Golos with learning of Torah. We should be like Poland, that the Rebbe spoke about how they should provide the Jews in Poland with rabbis and guides, people who will bring others back to tshuva, and to increase even more with life and simcha at the conclusion of our preparations for the Geula. Some of the highlights of this talk, it's the heel of the foot. It means the last generation, this is the heel generation, has the power to go up on its own. That means to elevate all the preceding generations. And this is done by virtue of the fact that this last generation becomes the first generation of Geula, where we not only liberate us, but liberate all the Jews of all the generations, especially that the Aaron HaKohen of our generation, the Rebbe is referring to the previous Rebbe, the leader of our generation, demonstrated clearly to us his love to all of the Jewish people. And even though that our generation is not such a high generation in terms of its spirituality, especially at the heels of Mashiach, as the Gemara describes the lowliness of this last generation in Tractate Sota, and also the qualities that we do have come as a result of the previous generations, and we got all of our inspiration and all of our assets in Torah mitzvahs from preceding generations, but nevertheless, the kindling of the neiros, of the lights of this generation, has come from the previous generation. Nevertheless, we have the power that afterwards and immediately we can have the flame go up on its own. Now, an excerpt from the book Besuras HaGeula, where the highlights of redemption are quoted from this talk. All this receives greater emphasis in recent generations, described as the heels of Mashiach, particularly in this generation, which is the last generation of exile. The Rebbe says only the heel of the foot, that means the absolute last generation, has the ability to rise on its own and elevate all previous generations, because the last generation of exile will be the first generation of redemption. And that's the redemption for all Jews throughout all generations. In particular, the shepherd, Aaron HaKohen of our generation, my sainted father-in-law, the Rebbe, the leader of our generation, has emphasized this through his invocation of the words, immediate tshuva, immediate redemption, and the announcement that we only have to polish the buttons, and afterwards, this too has already ended, and it only requires of us to stand prepared to greet our righteous Mashiach and the true and complete redemption.